Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, the podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm really pleased to have with me an exclusive interview, actually, with Steve Packham, who founded the Loan Charge Action Group. And he's here as a spokesperson from the Loan Charge Action Group. And we're just going to talk through a few different issues in relation to the loan charge. We have covered the technicalities in a previous podcast episode, so I can refer you to that. It's the one with Tom Wallace from WTT Consulting. So today we're not going to get into the detail of what it's about, but we're actually really going to talk about the impact of it on other people. So welcome, Steve. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so basically, having said we're not going to get into the technicalities of what the loan charge is, I'm just going to try and sum it up for our listeners so that they understand. So what it does is it treats income that people have received that they did not believe to be taxable at the time they received it as taxable income. And it goes back many, many years. And basically, people are now receiving very large tax bills from HMRC, which they had no idea were due. And that's it in a nutshell. As I say, the technical details we've already covered off in a previous podcast. So go back and listen to that if you want the full information. Okay, so one of the reasons why I've got Steve in is because I did a podcast interview with a loan charge victim just very recently. And one of the responses I got from doing that was from professional people that I know and respect. They had a view that somehow the loan charge has come about and affected people who didn't want to pay tax in the first place, or and somehow it was the victim's fault. So that was one of the things I wanted to talk to Steve about, because obviously having set up the Loan Charge Action Group and having spoken to lots of different victims of this change, he has a very good overview, much better overview than I have, as to what happened. But before we get too much into who is at fault, could you talk us through how the legislation came in from your perspective?
Yes, I had no idea about any of this as far as remuneration planning whatsoever until I had an inquiry from the revenue HMRC,
right,
which to me was totally unexpected. I went to see a tax advisor and they then put me off the loan charge, and as you pointed out, how it retrospectively goes back at that time 20 years. It's shattering. I cannot explain it to words. Literally, it's a life-changing event. And I think the point that people are raising about the people deliberately did this is very, very misguided. The majority of people use these schemes, ironically, to be compliant with IR35 legislation and also to comply with tax law. That was really the driver behind this. But I think it's worth pointing out that end clients also made the use of schemes a mandatory way of working for them. I think it's worth pointing out that other companies actually had presentations on site from umbrella providers in the oil and gas industry, and also recruitment agencies themselves run a preferred suppliers list that individuals can assume that the compliance and the due diligence have been done for them. And there's a lot of people, particularly in the public sector, who use schemes on the recommendation of their agencies.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's also misunderstood, I think, is that what the structures enable the self-employed to do, this is very apparent in the oil and gas industry. If you're a oil worker, you may go onto an oil rig for a number of weeks. You will then have to take time off.
Yeah.
You will then potentially get another contract, which may be with the same oil company, or maybe with a different one on a different on a different rig. There's an ongoing cycle. Now, what the loan facility enabled you to actually do was to normalise your income over the course of the year against the income that you would receive during the course of the year. Everybody has mortgages, insurance policies, food, cost, pay. So to give yourself a net monthly income. And I think the other thing quite key to point out is that really the net return in your pocket for these arrangements was very similar to a PSC.
Okay, so similar to the amount you would take out of your limited company.
Exactly. Yeah. The other benefit being from using a scheme, of course, is that the professional insurance policies which you have to take out as an individual. So things like the airline industry or in medicine, you could get a group cover, which the umbrella would cover for you. If you actually look at the constituents of these umbrella companies, some of them actually had at the end of them aviation or energy or health.
Right.
In the name. I think that's very misunderstood as well.
Yeah.
So no, never a case of people deliberately trying to avoid tax. It was to work in the easiest way possible to go to work. And the fact that it's part of the scheme structures that your accounting and your tax returns were done for you.
Again,
another big advantage.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's a massive headache for anyone running any company. Is kind of all of the finance behind it. Let's be
realistic about this. The average person who goes to work does not understand tax law. We'll never have.
No.
44,000 pages and counting, isn't it? I think.
I don't know. I do know that the UK's tax legislation is longer than the whole works of Shakespeare, and I got that from an accountant. So how on earth are we supposed to deal with that? I don't know. But I just want to pick up on a few points, actually, that you've just mentioned, because I've been in this sector for kind of 7 years now, so I think I know about this stuff. But there's some interesting points that you've mentioned that I wasn't actually aware of. So the fact that these kind of arrangements normalise your income. So usually as a contractor, it fluctuates. When you're working, you've got income coming in. And then when you're not working, you haven't. But these arrangements then normalise that. So you have a normal monthly income. So that's one point I didn't realise. Another point I hadn't realised was the insurance point. So I obviously know that someone working self-employed, they're in business and they're on their own accounts, so therefore they do have to provide insurance. But I didn't realise that these arrangements provided that for you. So that is another big incentive, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
So the key message here is it was all about compliance. And
yeah,
anybody as an individual that chose into these arrangements, they would have assumed that the due diligence was done and that they were working in a compliant way. And I think that's a very, very important thing.
That is a massive point, actually, because if I was referred to a preferred supplier list, whether it's by a recruitment agency or by the client that I'm working for, I'm going to assume that there has been due diligence gone on.
I guess the preferred suppliers list, people will, I'm assuming, if you get it, secure a contract on a Friday or start on a Monday, the easiest way for you to start work is to use an umbrella company, because the onboarding is quite straightforward. Yeah. In that instance, the list is given to you, you can work through. Quite a lot of people have actually gone for the first one on the list, which happens to be me today.
Yeah, and I guess that's natural. I will say that there is a known provider within this space that does begin with an A, so it's hardly surprising that they've picked up a reasonable amount of business. What is the financial impact in broad terms for people that are now being billed by HMRC in relation to the loan charge?
Well, the headline numbers in terms of loan charge calculations range dramatically from a few thousand pounds to telephone numbers. I think what's important to understand is the individual circumstances that sit behind that liability. Now, if you let's take an example, a social worker using a scheme between 2014 and 2017, if they were on, let's say, £50,000 a year, and they were drawing down loans of say £35,000 a year for those 3 years. That taxable amount now is £105,000. Now, whatever the sums are on that, the higher tax rate, they're looking at a tax bill of getting on to £50,000, which is their entire gross net income. Bearing in mind, home budgets are quite tight. So you have mortgage, as I said before, in a different way, mortgage, car loan bills, food, etc. There isn't a lot of disposable income there.
No.
On top of that, of course, you have the changes in the public sector to IR35 in 2017. Mm-hmm. If people have been deemed inside IR35 now, their take-home pay is going to be 30% less than it was 4 years ago. So it's a completely unaffordable amount. And really, bankruptcy, I would suggest, is the only option for these people.
So just to give it some context, really what you're saying is that the average bill is going to be at least your normal annual salary. I mean, I've heard of bills, I mean, you use the word telephone numbers. I think that's a really good way to describe it, because I think that in my mind, the average bill is at least 100,000, but I might be wrong on that.
There's one within the loan charge asset group. There is one liability which is well over £1 million.
You're kidding? A million.
However, that was a small company, and they were advised to draw down loans to reinvest back into the company as capital.
Right.
Which they've done, and obviously now there's
a charge on capital.
I think they employ 150 people, but fundamentally, the company will close.
Gosh. And then those people are out of jobs as well, those people that they employ. Yeah. Okay. And do you, I mean, from the perspective of the Loan Charge Action Group then, rather than yourself personally, perhaps, is it true that everyone affected by this loan charge should have realised they were in a scheme and just didn't want to pay tax? I mean, you know, that is the point that's been put to me.
No, absolutely not. I think this is where the revenue need to take a very large part of the responsibility for this, because they've not communicated with individuals at all.
Mm.
They've published their views, which are only a view, it's not necessarily the law, by spotlights which were aimed very much at the professional rather than the individuals. And not enough has been done to raise awareness on this. And it's a desperately sad situation. They've also been incredibly slow in opening inquiries into people, and time ticks on. So I think they have to take a lot of the responsibility and the mess that this has created.
Yeah, they kind of paint a picture. It's almost like they've got a PR machine somewhere. And I think when the legislation came in, I think it was very poorly communicated. I think my understanding of it is that most people don't even know that this is coming until they get a massive, shocking bill.
Correct. So that's really why initially we set the Loan Charge Action Group up, as I mentioned earlier. Mm. There was no information in the public domain.
Mm.
When you get the notification, it's horrible. So we set the group up with the intention of actually getting something onto the internet as a place to go. From there, obviously, everyone is in a situation they're all affected by it. So there's a community within there as well. We set the helpline up because obviously we get some very, very distressed people. But I think the most shocking thing for me, we'll talk about the campaign later, a lot of MPs who voted this in, remember this is an act of parliament.
Yeah.
They didn't know about the legislation. So one of the things that we did when we set the Loan Charge Action Group up is do contact your MP, explain what they voted for and how it will impact you as an individual. Because one of the things that MPs do have responsibility for constituents is issues to do with revenue.
Right. Yeah.
So that's really the background. Obviously, we've grown a lot over the time. We have been politically quite successful.
Well, actually, you've been massively successful. So we were chatting last week just as a prelude to this recording, weren't we? And you said to me that you're not a campaigner. And for a non-campaigner, you've done a phenomenal job in getting the message out there. And I think there's also an all-party parliamentary group in relation to this. Just for listeners to understand, that is just a group of MPs, a cross-section of MPs that have an interest in this subject. And there are lots of them for different subjects. But my point being, getting an APPG set up in this issue, which is a tax issue, is massive. And I think you've done an amazing job. And we will also no doubt talk about the support that the Loan Charge Action Group provides to the people that need it. But yeah, for a non-campaigner, it's massively impressive.
It's the membership that are responsible for that. Literally, they've spoken to their MPs.
Yeah.
I have to say thank you to Stephen Lloyd at this juncture, because Stephen Lloyd is not my MP, but he's the MP for, I think, Eastbourne and Willingdon, which is next door to me, and he's a Lib Dem. But Stephen was superb. Now, I contacted his office, and he'd had a couple of local constituents contact him about it. And he took the time to invest and understand how this situation came about, and he tabled the early day motion.
Okay, now, yeah.
So that's where the campaign started, and obviously as our members contacted their MP, the early day motion then got quite a lot of traction.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, yes, they formed a all-parliamentary group. They've been very, very supportive. They ran their own inquiry into the loan charge, where the output was contradictory to the official government report, yeah, which is the first member of the parliament. It culminated really in the Morse review.
Yes.
Probably touch on a bit later. But yeah, I think they get the unfairness of this, and it's quite clear that the revenue have to take the powers they've got now are absolutely extraordinary, and a lot of these powers have gone in unchecked, really, and it's getting worse. I mean, I think in the next time round, I think they can access your bank accounts without any.
Yes, I've heard about that one, actually. And just when we're thinking about kind of the MP side of things, so the loan charge legislation came in and was voted through Parliament. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised that the MPs that you talked to didn't really know or fully understand what they're voting for, because it's a complex tax position. But I mean, that's kind of fundamentally wrong, isn't it, that MPs are having to vote through these financial bills without necessarily really understanding what the impact that will have?
No, there's a lack of scrutiny around tax and some of the legislation within. And I think the loan charge itself, there were a lot of representations initially from a lot of parties and professional bodies. There's a lot of concerns out there, but on the whole, it was disregarded.
Yes. And having experience of working for a professional body and making those types of representations, my perception is that sometimes they just think that people making those representations are full of self-interest for whoever it is that they're representing. Right. But actually, it's bigger than that. And it was all about kind of these people receiving a six-figure at least tax bill that was unfair.
I don't think the impact of the normal working person was understood, if I'm honest with you.
No.
I think probably looked at more on a corporate level. But we are where we are.
I can't understand how it's ever reasonable to suddenly give people these tax bills that is so, so big that will have such an impact. I mean, you know, maybe if they felt that tax was owed, then that's kind of fine, we might disagree with that, but the size of those tax bills, and to go back over so many years, that was one of the fundamental things that was wrong with it, that kind of retrospective nature of it.
They would deny it's retrospective, they would say it's retroactive. It means the same thing.
They're
claiming tax on money that has been in years gone by, accumulates up into one balance, and then issue with a big tax demand. So, yeah, retroactive, it's the same thing, but they were always skewed as retrospective.
Yeah.
And certainty in law and the rule of law, it's a very fundamental thing. We were always brought up that way. It's what you're learning in school, yeah, right? Respect the rule of law.
Yeah.
I think the key thing about, and this is one of the outcomes from the Morse review, is that his review said that the law was clear in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it was clear in 2010, this is the IT Part 7A legislation. Why do they make changes in 2017?
And changes to this specific bit that's relevant for the loan charge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out that obviously the change they made in 2017, in their haste to punish contractors, the government completely ignored EU law, and that is now the subject of several legal challenges.
So they've ignored European law. And, you know, I know we're in a different position now than we were then, obviously within Europe or not. But the point being, they've ignored European law at the time of creating these laws.
Correct.
That's quite astonishing. And kind of the other point, actually, is if this, if it was always clear that that this way of operating was not legal or not compliant, then why did they not do anything about it in all the years running up to it? And how would it be possible to be in these schemes if they're not legal ultimately?
Correct. So that, so they haven't challenged them. I will give them some respect. They have recently, because of the traction that we've had and the issues that we've raised, they have got better recently in terms of notifying individual taxpayers, which they should have done all along.
Okay.
And we've certainly, within the Low Charge Action Group, we are seeing an increase now of public sector workers that have used schemes post 2017, which, of course, the low charge legislation was supposed to draw a line under tax avoidance for good, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. So, and actually that leads me on to another point, is kind of what's happening out there at the moment. You know, is it purely, you know, presumably because there's this loan charge, such schemes can no longer exist, you know?
Oh, there are new schemes emerging all the time. That obviously, they're outside of the loan charge legislation, but there are other, there's other solutions out there, which again, it's the same situation.
Yeah.
82 compliant, IR35 compliant, your insurance factored in, et cetera. So it goes on. So it's been a, I don't think it's had the output that they had intended, but, that's for another. We've certainly seen an increase in the number of, public sector workers post 2017.
Right. And just for our listeners, in 2017, there was some tax changes that came in relation to off payroll legislation that basically, I mean, there's another podcast that we've recorded on this stuff. But basically, these people were left with a choice of having their income reduced and going on to payroll, or potentially choosing one of these schemes that may then give them a higher level of income if they were in one of these schemes compared to payroll. That's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
It is. But I think the reality of this is that the people have had a certain income level prior to the IR35 changes. Mm. So they have mortgages to pay. They have monthly expenditure.
Yeah, yeah.
By slashing their income overnight, effectively, you can understand why people will potentially look at the solutions.
Absolutely. None of us can afford a drop in income. You know, whatever our income level is, we need that. We've got monthly bills to pay.
Correct.
So there are some other kind of impacts from the loan charge legislation. And in terms of, let's talk a little bit about the right to go to tribunal, because I believe that's now changed, hasn't it, as a result of this?
Absolutely. I mean, the loan charge itself, because it overrides everything that's in place, all the legislation prior, you cannot go to a tribunal, and therefore does the scheme legally achieve its objectives, or does it fail? That doesn't get heard, and obviously on the back of that, any potential mis-selling claim that you would have if the scheme failed, it doesn't exist.
So it's almost removed a basic freedom that all other taxpayers have got.
Right.
Wow.
And also, I think it's a point, I imagine this has been raised before, but there is the 1970 Tax Management Act, where the revenue was supposed to open an inquiry within a year, and they can potentially then go back to 4 years, and I think it's six if it's...
Yeah. Yes.
That's been overridden as well.
Yeah, so I think they can go back 6 years if they believe there's some kind of misdemeanor, but this loan charge now goes back beyond that, beyond what was acceptable previously.
Yeah. I mean, I believe there are some cases going through tribunals. There's a few contract schemes out there, but like I said, they haven't been finalised yet. Mm-hmm. So I think the loan charge is one thing in that regard, definitely.
Thinking about it also, one of the consequences of the loan charge is that the promoters don't appear to be accountable.
That's a fair point. At the end of the day, if the scheme has not been proven to fail, how can they be accountable?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's massive and really unjust about this, the whole thing, the whole way the legislation came in. It wasn't communicated well. The legislation itself, fundamentally unfair, and ignores what was previously acceptable practice in terms of how far back over finances HMRC can go. It's no surprise you've got a good level of support with the MPs and within Parliament. And what sort of things are you trying to achieve? Because I guess fundamentally HMRC are unlikely to U-turn on this. You never know. We see plenty of U-turns within government, so you never know. But but I mean, that has to be your ultimate aim, I guess. But there must probably be some other goals along the way as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that the APPG put forward last year was a sensible settlement offer.
Right.
Now, if you look at the bills that are, obviously, they're not going to collect the money they think they are. But they put forward something which was fair, final, and affordable. And it was a 10%, settlement opportunity on the overall balances of your loans. It also factors into that the litigation that's out there and the costs associated with that.
Yeah.
Also factored in collecting something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
People not being able to pay, forced into bankruptcy, that then becomes a drain on the state.
Yeah. Yes.
No tax revenue there, it's a tax cost. And finally, from a resourcing standpoint, it enables a revenue to draw a line under it, and obviously they can redeploy the staff into other areas. COVID,
yeah,
in one. If you look at that as an overall picture, I think it was a very good offer. And I think if you speak to 25 people, either personal or professional, you'll get 25 different views on that. But
yeah.
It was a finality. And again, if you go back to the lower paid workers, the example we spoke about earlier, I can't remember what came up with this being a number, but 10% of that loan value
could be
affordable with sufficient time to pay.
Yes.
But obviously, the landscape has changed dramatically. There's a triple whammy here. First, we've got the loan charge, the IR35 legislation, which we're not going to touch on too much. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the financial sector and some of the other bigger sectors, they made substantial cuts in resourcing prior to the IR35 delay being announced.
Okay, yes, yeah.
It's already been done. So a lot of contracts aren't working as a result of that. And then finally, of course, you've now got the COVID crisis. And these very same people that the government say, well, if you've got two people sitting next to each other, they should broadly pay the same amount of tax. Well, the permanent employee now gets COVID support and the contractor gets absolutely nothing, which I'm sure the excluded team have got on their radar.
Yes. So
if you look at the current climate now and what the expected tax take was expected to be on the loan charge, which I believe is, I think it was 3.2 billion, of which 75% has been come from employers. But so far, this government has spent 280 billion on COVID support. So it's nothing.
Yeah.
Where they are right now. But importantly, as we come out of the COVID crisis, instead of people being bankrupt and depending on the state, they can actually generate and contribute to recovery.
Yes, exactly.
So I very much hope the chance we'll look at that again, actually, to bring finality. The other thing that I would very much encourage is that there's no oversight and accountability of HMRC in general.
Mm.
And I feel that it needs to be looked at. It needs some accountability somewhere along the line. We're not unique in having horror stories with the way that people are being chased. And also, I would like a proper judge-led independent review into the loan charge and all of the disguised remuneration steps going back. Because I think there's certain accountability here. The law wasn't clear. There's a lot of things that need to be agreed, worked out, which hopefully will fix things for the future.
Yes. Yes.
And finally,
Sorry, Steve, yeah. Just on that point, is that probably HMRC and government would say, oh, well, we've had this review, and we've had the Morse review, there was something before that, and da-di-da, and we've done the reviews, you know, and yeah. What would you say to that?
Well, as I said, I think we touched on this, the output from the Morse review really wasn't, and I mean, I think we spoke about this already, the fact that if it was so clear, why were amendments made in 2017?
Yes.
Also, I believe that Morse actually in good faith, and I think the proposals that he put forward were meant in good faith. Mm. They weren't implemented by the revenue as they were meant. And I think there's one point around closed years. Anyone who had a closed year where they had disclosed could be taken out of scope of loan charge. Right. But the revenue then interpreted that as being a fully disclosed year to be taken out.
Oh, okay.
Of course. The problem here, of course, is that the individuals took professional advice.
Mm.
The advice would have been not to disclose fully. However, yeah. There would be enough on the tax return, the employer, what have you, where the revenue at the time still could have raised assessments.
Wow. So you know, they're almost interpreting the reviews that have gone so far in kind of a different way to perhaps the author of that review intended. And also, by having an independent judge-led review, then that should give it more teeth, if you like, to be properly independent. I'm not suggesting that the Morse review wasn't, but I think there's scope to do better and consider more in the round as well.
I think the terms of reference for Morse review were too narrow.
They were.
A shadow of a doubt. The whole way that freelancers work is not reflected in tax code now. No. It's not reflected in the economy now. The economy has changed in terms of the way that people are engaged.
Yeah.
And it's just not reflected. So, I personally think that there needs a complete review of policy for freelancers and contractors that reflects the modern way of working.
Yes, and until that happens, there will always be this type of scheme, if you like, for people to pay themselves their income. And the current system is probably not fit for purpose. So you have clients deciding whether you go on payroll or off payroll depending on the characteristics of how you work. And so that's the IR35 topic again, which is covered elsewhere. And so you know, you have that freedom taken away from you in terms of how you work and how you get paid. And so you are potentially going to look for other ways to kind of get your income back to the level that it was.
Yeah, and against that, you've also got that you are literally employee just for tax purposes, and there's no reflection of the holiday pay, sick pay, pension, termination period, redundancy pay. And obviously, as we are where we are at the moment with the COVID, there's no support for these people. So it's a very, very unfair system. And I think the whole thing needs to be looked at. The APPG actually at the moment are doing their own inquiry into how freelancing should work. Mm. So the outputs of that would be quite interesting.
There must be another way that we can have people work for themselves, but also support them a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, there's other ways you potentially could create a new coding and tax for freelancers rather than have to become either an employee or self-employed.
Yeah.
But in doing that, actually look at how people actually work. So, for example, is your contract less than 6 months? Yes, contractor. Yeah. Do you get holidays? No, contractor.
Yeah. Yeah, it you know, I think employment law likes to be complicated, but actually there are some very simple characteristics that we can look at as you're outlining. And I think there's a lot of work to be done. So I'm glad the APPG is looking at how contracting should work.
The final thing is, I feel that the tax advisory accountancy industry is a financial service. The layman does not understand this stuff at all.
No.
That's the reality of it. But I think that the FCA should probably regulate it in the same way that if you go and get a mortgage, you're getting professional advice.
Yeah.
You're protected. The protections just aren't there. I think that's a massive, massive gap in the
It is ludicrous when you think about it, because, you know, you've mentioned mortgages, pensions has got increasingly regulated over the years. And it is possible to do that because the average layperson doesn't understand any of this stuff. And why would they?
Well, exactly. Hence why we took advice on schemes in good faith.
Yes. Yeah.
No more. There's no more complicated than that.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that's a very important point. And it does surprise me, even though I've worked in this industry for a number of years, it does surprise me that kind of tax advice and financial advice is not better regulated. I don't know how the government can justify assuming that everyone will know how to pay tax.
I think ultimately the Treasury has oversight of the FCA and the has oversight of HMRC, so there's a common link there.
Yeah. It's kind of a no-brainer to do something in that. And I do think that there is some sort of government discussion ongoing about the role of tax advisors, but I'm not convinced that it will go far enough for what you and I are talking about just now. So anyway, you know, what's the kind of future looking like for people affected by the loan charge? I mean, I know that there's a few different things going on, different cases. Does it vary individually? What's going on out there?
Well, I think we spoke about this earlier. People's individual liability. A lot of people, I think, will be forced into bankruptcy.
Yeah. Actually, that was what I wanted to say, because of course HMRC say that people aren't going bankrupt as a result of this. I guess that's just not true.
HMRC will not make anybody bankrupt. Oh. Correct. They outsource it to debt collection agencies.
Yeah.
So it's a debt collection agency who will make you bankrupt, not HMRC.
So it's a nuanced wording. It's a bit of cleverness on their part, if you like. And there's
in the same way that in the impact assessment they said a few people were likely to go insolvent. Is that a few hundred, a few thousand?
Yeah, what is a few? So I know the Loan Charge Action Group is busy campaigning of lots of things. The other thing, actually, before we finish, I wanted to mention about the Loan Charge Action Group is the support that people get from it. And you know, you've talked about when you kind of first realize you've got this massive tax bill, apparently you must feel so alone and so shocked. And the brilliant thing about the Loan Charge Action Group is that there's other people there and you're not alone.
Absolutely. I think the help desk that we have has done a fantastic job in when they're contacted by individuals, identifying what the issue is. They need to get advice. You're not alone. As you said, this is not your fault.
Yeah.
I think it's been a great help to people. So we're going to continue to operate for those, because there's people still finding out now.
Yes.
Some of the communications around this have been absolutely appalling, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think the full impact has come to a head yet. I mean, we're talking about the bankruptcy. It's that by the time they actually work through the system, about 2 years away. So we should keep going on that. But again, fundamentally, we want proper change. But I said we've got the legals to play out. But I really would like the government to look again at that settlement offer. I think it makes an awful lot of sense in this current climate.
Yes. And the other thing, actually, about being in this current climate is the impact on individuals potentially going bankrupt. It then affects their ability to work in future. And it also, at the moment, don't we need consumers ready to spend money as and when we're allowed to circulate again?
Absolutely. And yes, you want people spending money. To do that, you have to earn.
Yeah.
But the point you made around about being declared bankrupt, that's a very, very good point. If you take the financial services, which does have a number of IT contractors, they have to be fit and proper people.
Yeah.
Being declared bankrupt or voluntarily going bankrupt, that's career ending. That's the end of your career.
And that is massive, because then, you know, through potentially no fault of your own, your career's over and you have to retrain, try and do something else. And then you can't then necessarily get that level of income that you had before.
Absolutely. It's just a mess. It really is a mess.
Yeah. I'm struggling to find anything positive to end on here, Steve. So I think what I will do is, obviously, I will put the Loan Charge Action Group contact details out with this podcast. So anyone that needs that support, it's there. And I think we've probably covered as much as we can. I mean, is there any bits of advice that you would give to anyone that's worried about this stuff?
Do speak to somebody, contact the Loan Charge Action Group.
Yeah.
You're not alone. There are no advisors that can help you in this space. You're not alone. We're there for you, really.
Yeah. And I think that's massive. So thank you once again for chatting to me today. I really appreciate it. And hopefully something positive may happen. Maybe the government will do something to support people that really need it.
I do sincerely hope so. I said we are in unprecedented times, and I can see that to a degree. Well, maybe when they first saw the APPG, certainly not, like, it doesn't tie in with everything, but we're in such unprecedented times. So if you look at the numbers that have been spent to keep things propped up, It does seem absolutely crazy to go after a group of people to serve. But
yeah, it's a relatively
small sums of money when they're getting no help during this current crisis either.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. Well, listen, keep up the good work. Keep fighting a good fight. And thank you again once more for joining us.
Thank you very much, Julia.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.